Welcome to the Coaching Revealed podcast series on health and wellness coaching. I'm one of the podcast hosts, Emily Tarani. In today's episode, Jeff Hull, Executive Director of the Institute, interviews Dr. Gail Gazelle and Dr. Les Schwab, both renowned leadership and wellness coaches with extensive experience in healthcare. They share their career journeys from being practicing physicians to impactful physician coaches, shedding light on the intersection of medicine and coaching. We dive into their personal transformations through coaching, highlighting the power of envisioning the future and overcoming self-limiting beliefs. In addition to overcoming challenges, both guests emphasize the need for physicians to embrace vulnerability and adapt to the changing landscape of healthcare. Dr. Schwab and Dr. Gazelle share insights from their research on effective coaching practices for physicians, highlighting the role of self-awareness and relationship building in coaching engagements. As the conversation progresses, they explore the future of coaching in healthcare, touching on the role of coaching programs in medical education and the potential for a more relational leadership style to reduce burnout among physicians. Join us as we uncover the transformative potential of coaching in the healthcare space on Coaching Revealed.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Coaching Revealed, the Institute of Coaching's podcast. My name is Jeffrey Hull. I'm the Executive Director of the Institute of Coaching. And in this podcast, we are really excited to delve deeply into the backgrounds, the knowledge of some of our most leading thought leaders, researchers, and coaches. And in this particular episode, we are going to dive into a very special and important area of coaching, and that's coaching in the healthcare space with physicians and physician leaders. And for that, I have two experts in the house. I have Dr. Leslie Schwab and Dr. Gail Gazelle. Both have many, many years of work as leadership coaches, as health and wellness coaches, but also as physicians. So they have unique backgrounds. And it's also important to note with both Gail and Les that they are an important part of the tribe at the Institute of Coaching. They've both been thought leaders with us, partners with us for many years. They've been involved in recent research that we're going to talk about that looks at what does it take to be a successful coach in the healthcare space, especially with physicians in today's world. We all know the research has shown that, you know, burnout is rampant in all workplaces around the world, but it's particularly egregious in the healthcare space and in particular in the United States. So we have experts that are well versed in that world. And I am super excited to welcome both Gail and Les to join me today. How are you both doing?
Doing well. Thank you.
Wonderful. Pleasure to speak with you today, Jeff.
You know, we at the Institute of Coaching know you both well from having had you as thought leaders with us over the years, as fellows with the Institute, and involved in different research projects. But I think a good place for us to start our discussion would be to hear a little bit about your individual backgrounds, because your stories themselves are interesting. It's not everyone that goes through the trouble of becoming a doctor and then actually practices clinically as a physician and then evolves toward coaching. But I'd like to have both of you maybe share a little bit about your path. Like, how did you first decide to become a doctor and then ultimately becoming a coach?
Well, thank you. So my trajectory is that I was always interested in the field of end-of-life care. And so I volunteered in a hospice when I was an undergrad at Cornell, and then decided to go to medical school with the express purpose of helping people who were facing the last chapter of their lives. Went to medical school, did my residency in internal medicine here at one of the smaller Harvard teaching hospitals, and then began my work as an internist because it turned out that actually in the late 80s and 90s, palliative care wasn't even a field yet. So I worked in a large HMO here in Boston. And then when they were ready to start a palliative care program, they kind of looked around and thought, well, who can do this? I had actually done a medical ethics fellowship. So they thought, well, she knows something about ethics. Let's pick her to start an end-of-life training program. So I did that for many years. I worked in hospice. I became faculty at Harvard Medical School. And I loved the work. I really loved it. It's incredibly sacred work, helping families and individuals in this final chapter of their lives. But one day a light bulb kind of went off that was, gosh, you know, I'm helping people who are dying. Maybe I could help people who get to live. Yeah. And so we were just beginning to understand more about physician burnout. I had actually gotten coached myself and found it incredibly helpful. I'd had years of therapy for complicated issues from my childhood. Therapy was great, but coaching was almost like leapfrogging forward. It just almost felt like boulder shifting. And so I thought, well, maybe I can do something to assist colleagues who are struggling with burnout. So I pivoted, did my training at what was then the Coaches Training Institute, CTI. I did that in 2011 and hung out my shingle looking for physician clients that I could coach. Fast forward, I've had the pleasure of coaching well over 500 physicians and physician leaders since that time. I actually stopped my clinical career somewhat unexpectedly, actually due to an illness in my son. So I stopped my clinical career in 2013 and have just been doing coaching, wellness, writing books, et cetera. And I'll just share lastly that my most recent book came out last year, Mindful MD, Six Ways Mindfulness Restores Your Autonomy and Cures Healthcare Burnout. And that certainly has a lot of bearing on what we're talking about today.
Right. Yeah. Well, congratulations. That's a great topic, great timing, and certainly bringing your wisdom to those folks in need is incredibly helpful.
Well, thank you.
How about you, Les? How did you ultimately make the journey?
Well, looking back on my career, I think serendipity has been a huge factor. So one is that I was a bio major as an undergrad, but my mentor said, Les, you want to get grants, get an MD instead of a PhD. I had no intention of being a clinician. So with that, I applied to medical school. And when I landed at Stanford, I realized I don't want to do research. Spent the remainder of medical school and my training also at a small Harvard teaching hospital, retrofitting myself to become a clinician. And that's what I thought. I really just want to be a clinician. And then my first job at the VA, my boss gave me a leadership position to be section chief for primary care at the department. Oh, what the heck, I'll try it. And of course, I liked it. I transitioned to private practice and was managing partner of that for several years. And then that practice got acquired by a large group practice here in Boston called Harvard Vanguard at the time, now called Atrius Health. And when the practice got acquired, I got brought in as the director for internal medicine for the system. And that's where Gail and I first met, actually. And then I was promoted to the chief medical officer in 2008. And at that point, the board wisely gave all the new C-suite people the chance to have a coach to learn their new jobs. So I called the best consultant I had ever worked with, who gave me the name of the best coach he knew, and she became mine. And she coached me for 2 years, and it was the most profound educational experience of my adult life, as it was so action-oriented, in a way, as Gail pointed out, that therapy is not necessarily. And it was so psychologically knowing and supportive. It really gave me great insight on how to transact what I was supposed to do or wanted to do in the real-time stuff. After 5 years on that, I left and had, fortunately, some time to ponder what's next. So I went back to half-time clinical practice, but also got myself credentialed as a coach, having had such a great experience. And I got my training at something called the Gestalt International Study Center. It uses the same fundamental theory of human development, cognition, and meeting. You know, how do human beings encounter and communicate effectively with each other? And I found it, after all my clinical years, so credible as a theory of how things actually are that all the coaching tools derived from it made sense to me. So I hung my shingle out in 2014 and slowly built up the coaching practice. Have loved it, and retired from clinical practice 2 years ago.
You know, what was going through my mind as I was listening to both of you is interesting that you both had the experience of being coached. So I'm curious to hear a little more from both of you. What was it that the coach did for you when you had a coach that first time? It sort of was an aha, like, this is really powerful.
Yeah, I'll go first. It's a great question because I see my experience getting coached is really pivotal in my own life, not just my career journey, but my life journey. You know, coaching is so action oriented. Again, I'd had a lot of therapy. Like many physicians and many human beings, I was pretty wounded from my childhood. And therapy had been great, but coaching, it was so much about self-limiting beliefs, frankly. and also patterns of reactivity, that it really helped me begin to separate kind of what was then and what's now. So therapy, you know, was a lot about the past and retelling the difficulties, right, but not necessarily about what is the future that I wanted. So my coach helped me envision what it was that I wanted. And let's face it, if you get in your car and you don't have a destination, you don't have any hope of getting there. So that alone, that kind of envisioning, began to help me begin to think about what was the roadmap to get where I wanted. And again, it was partially burnout in my own career, but I also had a child on my own. I was raising that child. I had a busy academic career as well as a clinical career. I wasn't really living up to who I wanted to be, more, I would say, on the home front, but certainly as well as in my career in terms of how I was showing up. And my coach really challenged me, you know, how do you want to be showing up, Gail? Who do you want to be in this one precious life that you get to lead? And let's really think about how you're going to get from here to there. So exercises like the future self, you know, that wonderful envisioning who this future Gail in my case would be, was extraordinarily helpful. And then looking at patterns of self-criticism that I'd certainly learned in my family and accentuated in my medical training, coaching really helped me unravel some of that and realize how antiquated and false it was. There were so many things that coaching helped me with, but as I said, it literally felt like boulders shifting. It just felt like things that I was going to go with to my grave with that were immutable parts of who I was, all of a sudden, they weren't so immutable. And the power of that just really was astonishing to me. I'll say further that, you know, I had patients who started saying, so I was still in practice, and patients said things like, Dr. Gazelle, are you in love? You look so happy now. Because I think my whole demeanor lightened quite a bit. You know, I didn't take it all quite as seriously. My shoulders could relax a little bit more. I was more comfortable in my own skin. So honestly, the power of that was something that I really wanted to share with fellow physicians.
I love that. Yeah, what a great story. I mean, I think that the idea of us being immutable in our personalities is often one of the starting points for the breakthrough. Les, what about you?
So again, it was very psychologically knowing and action oriented. So I had a new job, lots of new peers, no longer internists, you know, and people with positions, not only clinical positions, but legal and finance and all that. So there was a lot really to learn about being a member of that leadership team. What coaching enabled me to do was to, first of all, change from some of my defaults, as well as help figure out some actionable items that would be coming up in my agenda as CMO. So in terms of dealing with my defaults, I did get a survey instrument, which revealed to no surprise to me that I'm a people pleaser. And that doesn't necessarily work when you have a high degree of leadership responsibility. You're going to be disappointed and still relational. You know, like you maybe have to be disappointing over a task, but can you remain in relationship with that person? In the Gestalt world, they would say that my people pleasing has valence, that it's a strength, actually. And don't abandon it, but can you increase your range? So this is not about changing who you are. It's about increasing your range so you can be more of who you are or want to be. And so there would be, you know, practice, role play and discussion and so forth, taking the insights that I too had acquired over many years of therapy before, but building them into something more contextualized to the job I had to do. Another thing was that even as an IM director, I hadn't done a lot of real delegation, but as CMO, it was impossible to continue to be the sole contributor. It was impossible to do that work without heavy reliance on other people. We'd set up the experiments in coaching. What would it be like if you delegated this task to, you know, your chief of specialty services and help deconstruct the feeling about it so that it wasn't, so that I really got to lay it all out there. And at that point could decide I can let go because I see the value in doing it. I'm gaining more than I'm losing by giving up such control and management, you know, personal management, and to move on. So it would help me fill in the gaps for many things that I had to do to become successful at the new job. But as a model for further change, life change, or change in any other dimension. I just found it so powerful. Like I thought when I was trying to get positive change in my patients, you know, when I had to prescribe stuff and get them to change their behaviors for the benefit of their own health, it was often very difficult. There was incredible resistance and personal restraining beliefs, as Gail pointed out. And when I got the coaching tools, that's what had really been missing for me as a clinician, that as a primary care doc, if I was going to have hope of having people change for the better, they had to, one, start believing in themselves, and two, had to be given some experiments to prove it could be done. And none of my clinical training experience at that point had that same power, even at that patient care level.
Yeah, I love what you're sharing about giving the creating the space with your coach to experiment with trying something new, with looking, as you said, Gail, into the future and envisioning, and then practicing, right? Because you don't just step out of the coaching crucible and just change. It takes time. It takes the ability to make a few mistakes and not be overly self-critical, which is hard for everyone, but probably particularly hard for physicians. You know, and in our culture, it's particularly true, Western culture, I guess I'm referring to, but doctors are viewed as kind of the gods of our religion of science, you know, that they're supposed to be the experts, supposed to have the answers. I mean, even I just recently, as we talked about prior to this, I recently went to a doctor and had a spider bite. You know, I kind of was looking at this poor doctor like, you know exactly what this is, right? And you know what to do all about it. And of course, she kind of looked at me like, well, it could be this, it could be that. So all that to say that it's not an easy job to be in a position where you're viewed by the public and by folks that come in as to be the savior.
I'll add to that, Jeff. We're trained to look to ourselves for that. What becomes embedded is that we believe that we are a failure if we don't always have an answer. And you can even think about the beginning of the pandemic. If you think back to March, April, May, June of 2020, when there were no answers, right? There was a shortage of personal protective equipment. People were at very high risk. You know, levels of mortality were very high. And I had so many physicians that I was coaching who felt like personal failures because they didn't have an answer. You know, physicians who were, you know, spending weeks at a time at hospitals under tremendous fear and risk of their own health, of bringing it home to their families, who were sacrificing a great deal, and yet who couldn't appreciate all of the good they were doing because they were so caught in, I'm a failure because I can't figure this out. And to me, that's very emblematic of something that's very problematic in our training. There are a lot of things that are problematic in medical training when Les and I, who are both white-haired in training, but tragically still here, you know, in 2024, there are a lot of things that we learn in our training that we always have to be the all-knowing paragon. We always have to have an answer. We have to be in control, in command. We can't show any vulnerability. So just thinking about all the fears that physicians had, the very real human fears in the early part of the pandemic, but you can't show that. You always have to be invulnerable. Heaven forbid you should be sick and need to call in sick. You could be shamed. We learn that if we're not perfect, we're some sort of failure. Because unfortunately, in addition to all of the challenges in the current healthcare environment, which are really, really unsustainable, what physicians are expected to do in their work lives now, you know, the system is really dysfunctional, would be putting it mildly. In addition to that, we carry so much baggage about who we are supposed to be a member of this elite club of physicians. And to me, it's that combination that can really topple us and can really lead to a lot of burnout. So system is broken. There's that component. Most of us as physicians do not have a lot of control over that. But then there's the other part of it, which is the individual part. How do we respond to all the things that we can't control? And how do we work with our very training and what it instilled in us that make it very hard for us to be flexible and accommodate to all of the challenges that we're facing.
Ready to advance your coaching practice? Join the Institute of Coaching and tap into the world's leading resource for coaching science and professional development. With over 4,000 members across 130 countries, the IOC offers invaluable networking opportunities with an elite global coaching community and innovative learning to broaden your knowledge and keep you at the forefront of coaching best practices. Engage in cutting-edge learning events with world-renowned coaching scholars, from webinars and seminars to discussion groups, research projects, and more. Try any membership free for 30 days. Use promo code IOCPodcast and visit instituteofcoaching.org/join to get started.
I'd like to add another element to a typical journey, which is that self-sacrifice is correct and noble and heroic, even to the detriment of one's own health. You know, put the other person's oxygen on first. You'll somehow survive while being asphyxiated. And I also want to think the nature of practice has changed. It's impossible to have all the answers. You know, the explosion in technology has put lots of medical information that you could not possibly contain in one's own head. And the patients know some of that too, because they can search. So it's not so godlike anymore in terms of all knowing, but I think there's still some expectation of all caring and all doing, you know, even if you have to ask somebody else for an answer. I also think the nature of practice has changed. It's become a team sport, not an individual artisanal enterprise for which everybody is there just to serve your shop. There is tremendous interdependence on team, but we're not trained to work in team. Docs are informal leaders of their own team of nurses and MAs and OR techs or whoever, and they don't have any leadership training to know how to make those relationships work. So there's a lot that coaching can offer all the practitioners of medicine about dealing with this new world where you're no longer the expert, no longer so godlike, highly interdependent, and it's novel.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you added that, because the whole environment in which healthcare is delivered has just been transformed before our eyes by technology. At the same time that in many ways the financial systems and the government control and the insurance systems and all of the infrastructure stuff has not really kept up. And the person, you know, the people that are sort of often right in the center of that maelstrom are the physicians. So, you know, that's a really nice segue to something I definitely want to dig in with you both for a few minutes, which is that you've both been involved in a research project sponsored by the Institute of Coaching to look at what does it take to effectively coach physicians. I'd love for you to share a little bit more in depth of what it was like to engage with this project. And I'm super excited and want to congratulate you both that I've just learned that it's being published by the Mayo Clinic coming up soon. And I know you were both involved with the project with our director of research, Angela Passarelli. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that research, how you think it has evolved and what your hopes are for it. I know there are probably people listening to this podcast who either do coach in the healthcare space or would love to get involved with coaching physicians. And so developing those competencies is really important. So hopefully this research and this article, these publications will be helpful. So I don't know which one of you wants to jump in, but I'm curious to learn more about your thoughts on the competencies it takes to effectively coach physicians.
I can start and happily let Gail continue and complete. We both felt that, you know, the medical profession, because of the distress it's in as a whole and the ill fit of the medical journey of physicians to feel safe, effective, and continue to do meaningful work, doesn't allow them to do it. You know, they're trapped by their own inhibitions and suppositions and cultures and so forth. And the world of medicine has become much less friendly to a sense that one is becoming a good physician. So given the particularities of the environment and of of one's individual development, certain areas needed emphasis in terms of coaching in order to help our physician clients really self-actualize. For instance, the physician regards himself as a you know, storehouse of information and, almost purely a cognitive machine and doesn't often have time for the self-regard to know how are we doing in our own bodies or how are we doing with our own feelings. And physicians need to know how to hold the space for what their emotions are telling them and for what their bodies may be telling them. And to learn to give them space as a critical part of becoming self-aware, to actually hold and understand and then use that total experiential information, that is something that physicians need. It's perhaps not a unique competency to coaching, but it is a particular need of physicians and needs emphasis. So that's just one example of a competency. Also, this business about becoming more interdependent and having to let go of the heroic ideal, for which we were amply rewarded until we found it to be so isolating and difficult to continue to be. Helping to deconstruct that kind of notion is a particular need of physicians, and the associated competencies needed to be able to do that, move them from the notion of this is how you have to be to this is what do I really want to be. We're also concerned that coaching is a relatively new field and takes all comers who can say that they're a coach, and that given the distress of the medical profession and its importance in our culture, that it was really important to assert that people who claim to be good for coaches, physicians, actually have the substance of what they need to do.
You know, a lot of people are entering the fray of coaching physicians. A lot of physicians are becoming physician coaches, and certainly many non-physicians. And I do a lot of coach mentoring, and I was finding myself alarmed by the vast array of what people were calling coaching. A lot of what I call the three T's, the telling, talking, and teaching, which is not what coaching is about. So a group of us, Margaret Moore, Angela Passarelli, a wonderful psychometrician from the NBME, Les and I, and one other individual, Rob Kramer, brought together a work group of expert physician coaches. The National Board for Medical Examiners, they're the people who develop the tests that we physicians have to take. So we spent well over a year, I think almost 2 years, developing these competencies because we were alarmed by what people were calling coaching. And we wanted to develop standardized competencies that would be in addition to baseline competencies like the ICF competency. So these do not stand alone. We're talking about coaches who have adequate training, who've really proven their mettle and want to have kind of a more advanced skill set. For non-physicians who coach physicians and physician leaders, we wanted to provide a lot of information about training, about mindset, about healthcare context. For physicians who coach physicians, we wanted to be clear that there's a lot that you have to unlearn. You have to unlearn being the expert. We physicians are very good at being the expert. That's what we are bred and groomed to do. And that is the opposite of what we do when we are coaches. We're there to get curious about who this human being is and what's going on for them. We're taking them on a learning journey. We're there to learn. We're not there to tell them or to instruct them, or to be, you know, the one who has the bright ideas. So there's a tremendous amount that we have to unlearn. So the competencies, I'm really proud to say, kind of combine those two backgrounds, really, because we're not here to say, the IOC certainly is not here to say that only physicians can coach physicians, far from it. Anyone who is a trained and really good at their trade as a coach can coach physicians. But there are competencies that are needed. So we're really thrilled that it's coming out in a major medical journal, the Mayo Clinic Proceedings. We don't have an exact publication date, but we really think it'll help everyone in the coaching field kind of go up a level to really sharpen their game. And for people who are bringing coaches on, either individually or with an organization, that they have some idea of what these competencies are, because we well know that many sponsors and stakeholders, they don't really know what this coaching thing is all about, right? So we hope it can be helpful in coach training, in coach selection, and for individual coaches and for physicians who are seeking a coach. And I just want to clarify, too, we're not in any way thinking that physicians are the only people in healthcare who can benefit from coaching. We wanted to start with physicians. We knew that there would be different issues for nurses, for therapists, for the many technicians, et cetera, who work in healthcare. But the starting point was physicians.
I wanted to add one technical note about the research, too, which is that thanks to Angela and her, you know, excellent background in research, that to arrive at expert opinion in the social sciences, you use a process called a Delphi process, which means gets a certain panel of people together to put out an initial document and then vet it with stakeholders of all categories, physicians, coaches, people who sponsor coaching, people who are buying coaching, medical leaders, so forth, and vet the initial document with them and then find the concordance with our recommendation, which was very high when we put it out to about 100 people, which gave us the confidence to go and make a final document and gratefully have it accepted for public.
You know, from my standpoint, where I sit in my role as part of the leadership team and being peripherally involved, obviously Angela and Margaret have been really shepherding the process. But I think it's really a wonderful example of what the Institute of Coaching can provide to the coaching profession as it evolves. And that leads me to want to talk to you towards the end of our discussion a little bit about how you see the future. You know, I know that, as Gail said, a lot of the system is broken. I don't think it's been fixed. The pandemic sort of brought it all maybe out to a place of visibility in terms of how fractured and challenging our healthcare system is in the U.S. in particular. In other parts of the world, some aspects of healthcare may be working more effectively, but they have their own, you know, each country has its own unique challenges. But I'm curious to hear, you know, as you coach younger physicians, you know, are you even cautiously optimistic that some of this is starting to permeate and people starting to take care of themselves, thinking a little bit differently about their roles? Certainly coaching has a role to play in that. But what are your thoughts as far as the future of the space?
Well, I am probably a cup half full person, but I'm more than that, a pragmatist. When we make finances the core of healthcare, it will only lead to problems. When we take it away from being the human endeavor that it is and we make it about profits and bottom line, it's going to be very hard to have a functional system that meets the needs of both patients and of the many individuals who provide the care. I see a lot of hopefulness in a couple of arenas. One, many medical schools now have coaching programs for their medical students. This has actually become a widespread trend. Many residencies are offering coaching programs for their trainees. And so what that is starting the whole idea of coaching conversations. Les touched on that, how coaching conversations can really benefit us in the exam room and on the hospital wards. They can help us take much better care of the vulnerable human beings who, you know, come to us in need. But even more than that, the coaching approach, which is, again, gaining traction in medical education, undergrad and graduate, can have a powerful effect on how physicians and others in healthcare manage the stresses that they face. Now, I'm very big on mindfulness. Again, my book came out, Mindful MD, 6 Ways Mindfulness Restores Your Autonomy and Cures Healthcare Burnout, because I think that that's something else that we can all be using. The stories that we tell ourselves, the unhelpful thoughts that we have, the ways that we are not compassionate with ourselves, things that mindfulness, beyond sitting on a meditation cushion, but really becoming the master of our own minds, can help us step out of fear-based thinking, which is what we come out of training very skilled in, unfortunately, and can bring out more compassion toward ourselves and toward others. There, unfortunately, is a lot that none of us can change. The corporatization of healthcare is not about to stop anytime soon. The demands of the electronic health record are not about to stop. But what can stop and what we can all contribute to is, what can I do today to have the healthcare system I want to have? How do I want to be showing up? because a lot of us in healthcare are not showing up as our best. We feel so done unto by a broken system that we're kind of acting out in a lot of ways. We're not treating our colleagues, let's say, and coworkers with the respect that we all need to have for one another. So for me, the mind training that mindfulness provides can really help all of us do better. And each of us take responsibility for the part that we can control, which is ourselves and showing up how we want to be showing up, how we're going to look back and be proud of.
To answer your first question, what are the younger physicians like? I think there have been some changes for the better. I think they're increasingly aware that the demands of personal life are legitimate and need to be structured into the whole of their time. I think they understand that they are interdependent in a way that my generation did not. But they also still feel very done unto because, as Gail points out, the sense of control is very limited. So I'm posing the question, how can you recover a sense of agency for our immediate workmates? And what might we want to exert in terms of transacting our wishes for how those relationships might work that would make them better and more mutually supportive? And then we have the department, you know, what might we manage up if we have the possibility of some agency in changing a workflow or procedure or schedule or something? How might we become advocates? And so on and so on. And I agree with Gail that the environment is unattainable, but the recovery agency at some level of one's professional life is very healthy and may give one the courage to try the next level. So I think that's really important. And the other thing is what's important in leadership coaching. You know, Tate Shanafelt published a study. You know, he's one of the leading lights about physician burnout and wellness in the country, showing that the level of burnout in a particular unit was closely correlated with the leader's leadership style. And that those leaders who had command and control leadership had twice the average burnout of those leaders who were the most relational. I think those of us doing some leadership coaching have a job to do to help leaders become less command and control, which is the model we were raised on in our training, and become more relational and to help them practice it. So I think those leadership conversations are going to be very important.
Yeah, that it's so interesting because what I'm listening as I hear the two of you playing bookends, what's striking me is that you're both optimistic around the evolution of what I would call intrapersonal and interpersonal development for the next generation. In other words, you know, what Gail is pointing to is taking accountability for yourself and what you can, as you develop yourself, your mindfulness, which the science absolutely underpins in terms of the benefits of being self-reflective and contemplative and not just sitting on a cushion, as you said. And then, you know, Les, you're talking more on the interpersonal level, which is you don't do any of that in isolation. You do it all as part of a relational dynamic with a group. And so coaching can be supportive of both ends of that spectrum. And you both articulated that so well. I'm wondering if we can wrap up with some tips. You know, I feel like I'm blessed to have two real true experts in the house. So if I were listening to this podcast and I was thinking, oh, you know what? I haven't really worked in that space. I'd love to add it to my portfolio. Obviously, I want to get that article on coaching competencies for physicians, and I want to look at what I need to do to learn those. But what else would you recommend as experts in the field for people to be thinking about if they wanted to become coaches to physicians or move into the healthcare space?
Les, do you want to go first?
Well, just to recognize that it is a particular journey and what the inner journey of becoming a physician has been and is becoming. Become familiar with the particulars of the mindset, of the particular hurdles jumped, of what the working life is like. And to become mindful of what the current state of healthcare is, you know, that the client may have experienced it as a patient, does not experience all the massive change going on beyond the exam room door. So I would say, talk to some physicians, get to know their stories, incorporate that into your understanding of who they were, who they will need to become.
Wonderful.
Yeah, well said. And I think, you know, people may be thinking, oh, that's easier said than done because I can't pick up the phone and just call doctors and say, I want to chat with you about what it's like to be a doctor because they're a little busy, needless to say. But you know, to your point, Les, that actually, you know, is a little bit of a promo for the Institute of Coaching, because there are people like you folks, and there are others that are part of our tribe that are MDs that have worked in healthcare spaces, whether they're the head of nursing or the head of, you know, physician in groups, and they do coaching, or they've had coaches, or they're exposed. So, you know, that's one way to network with physicians, is to get involved with the Institute. So,
well, let me just add two things. One, which is a tip for physicians who are coaching physicians, which is stop the three T's, the telling, teaching, and talking. It's not about your bright ideas and your being the expert about who this human being is. But the second thing, I don't think we'd be complete if we didn't say that Les and I lead a monthly coaching huddle for those who coach healthcare professionals, which is available to fellows and, I believe, members of the IOC. We meet monthly. And this is the kind of thing that we talk about. It's a really wonderful group to network, to learn more about coaching healthcare professionals, and to bounce ideas off of people. So please feel free to join us. We'd love to see you there.
I'm so glad that you added that, Gail. It's so great that that's one of the things we can do with the tribe at the Institute of Coaching, is help us build those connectivity, that those connections, and learn from each other. Because coaching can be a rather isolating activity. Well, I'm very, very honored and appreciative that you've both given of your time to be with me today. And so I just want to thank you, and also give you both an opportunity to share. I know, Gail, you've got a wonderful new book out. Any other things you'd like to share in terms of contact information or follow-up?
Yeah, I'll share my email address if people have questions or want to chat more about this great field of coaching physicians. Mine is easy, info@gailgazelle.com.
Okay, and I want to add one more thing, another research project that IOC sponsored that I was the principal investigator, which is that we showed that coaching actually works, and then that the results are doable in terms of some important variables for physicians: burnout, job efficacy, job satisfaction, and so on. And I'd be happy to talk with anybody about this or any other item that came up during this really wonderful podcast. And my contact information is Les, L-E-S, at L Schwab Coaching, LSCHWABCOACHING.com.
Just from me personally, I just want to thank you for being incredibly value-adding support of the Institute of Coaching and the research. Coaching has reached a new level. We are, with folks like you, at the forefront in terms of the science, in terms of the learning, and in terms of the growth of the profession. So I just want to reiterate our thanks from the Institute for your involvement with us over many, many years. We really, truly appreciate it.
It's a total pleasure. So thank you.
Yeah. And we're thankful to the Institute for the opportunity it's given us to grow in it.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and join us again. Drop us a note. Let us know what you'd like to hear and what you'd like to learn from Coaching Revealed from the Institute of Coaching. And we'll hopefully see you soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Coaching Revealed, brought to you by the Institute of Coaching. You can learn more about the Institute on our website at instituteofcoaching.org. You can stay up to date with new episodes of our podcast by liking and following Coaching Revealed. You can also find us on social media, on LinkedIn, Instagram, and X with the handle Institute of Coaching. We also love hearing from our guests, so please reach out to us with thoughts you have on this episode and any questions you have about coaching. Until next time, this is Emily Tarani with Coaching Revealed.